Thanks for listening to Exploring the Wine Glass podcast, the podcast for people who love wine. I'm Lori Budd, a UC Davis winemaking program and WSET Level 2 graduate. You can find Exploring the Wine Glass on all the socials, as well as your favorite podcast catchers. If you haven't subscribed yet, now's the perfect time. I promise I'll never tell you what to drink, but I'll always share what's in my glass. Hey everyone, thanks for listening to Exploring the Wine Glass. Today, we head back to Winefabet Street. Today's letter is D, and it stands for Dornfelder, an interesting grape that was created when August Herold crossed Helfensteiner with Heroldreby in 1956. Typically, the red wines of Germany are known for their lighter color and body. However, Dornfelder led the way for producing the more internationally accepted style of deep color. While you are sipping and listening, please rate, review, and subscribe to Exploring the Wine Glass to help others find us. So sit back, unscrew, uncork, or saber a bottle and enjoy learning about this not-so-well-known grape variety, Dornfelder. Welcome to Winefabet Street! We do have our guest of honor here, who is about to get us in trouble again. But welcome to Winefabet Street. I can't believe that we are already on the letter D of season 2.
Time flies.
It really is. It really is. So today we are talking about Dornfelder.
And this is the first for me.
Yeah, it kind of plays nicely into the weekend theme of our little group Wine Pairing Weekend, who did Godforsaken Grapes. I kind of think this has to fall into that category because it's definitely not on the tip of everybody's tongue or on everybody's palate. Well, we're going to see. I'm going to show my bottle. I haven't opened it yet. It's a corkscrew, but I haven't opened it yet. This is what I am drinking. So I am drinking a Leonard Krush Dornfelder. And it is from the Rheinheisen. And Deb, what are you drinking?
I've got, and this is a Windisch Dornfelder.
A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H, I, J, K, L, M, N, Q, R, X, T, U, V, W, X, Y, and Z. Now I know my ABC. Next time, won't you sing with me?
How's that for music, huh?
Yeah.
All right. So,
I like it.
So as a little background, I started getting my videos muted and booted off of Facebook. Well, actually, not booted off of Facebook, but just that portion of the video was muted. And then I got notification on YouTube that my video was taken off of YouTube. And, you know, YouTube has that big three strike, you're out thing that I don't really understand how it works. But they did inform me that it wasn't a strike against me. But I got a little nervous that I didn't want any strikes against me. So I reached out to Deb and I told her what happened. So I thought we were doing all right since we credited Elmo as being a Sesame Street character, right? I mean, I thought we covered it all. It's an education program, so that covers the copyright rule. We gave credit. We said who the lyrics were by. So now we have the ABCs of the wine. And by the way, just so you know, Deb, that song took me 2 hours to find.
Did it really? I'm sorry.
There were a lot of singing ABCs and a lot of bad versions. There was one with barking dogs that I kind of thought that would be kind of cool. Was a little out
about
of
the chipmunks. We would end up in the same
chipmunks.
Spot.
The chipmunks were there, but I thought that we would really get in trouble with the chipmunks. So that is our new song, although Elmo will be with us in every episode.
Cheers.
Lancia. Oh my.
Not as bad as I thought it would be.
Oh my.
Mine's like cherry pie.
Cherry is a very good descriptor. It is very, very cherry.
Cherry pie was the first thing that came to my mind.
Yeah, it's very cherry. But we'll get into that a little bit later.
All right, I'm Debbie Giaquindo. I'm the Hudson Valley Wine Goddess. I'm a wine writer and blogger at HudsonValleyWineGoddess.com. I am author of Tapping the Hudson Valley, Day Trips and Weekend Itineraries to the Hudson Valley area, visiting all the craft beverage producers, farmers markets, restaurants, and more. And I am partner in restaurant in Stone Harbor, New Jersey, called Kitchen 330, and that's where you can find me in the summertime. I think that's it, right?
Yeah, and you are free for a little bit. You are free for a little bit.
Yeah.
All right, so I am Lori Budd. My husband, Michael, and I own Dracena Wines in Paso Robles. We focus on Cabernet Franc, our 2017 Reserve Cabernet Franc, just won double gold in the San Francisco Chronicle, so we are pretty darn excited about that. I am also the founder of Cab Franc Day, and in addition to our daytime jobs, or I guess the daytime job in the winery, I went back to school to UC Davis for winemaking, and I am a WSET Level 2 graduate with distinction.
Ooh.
Woohoo. All right, so that is us. So thank you, everybody who is joining either live or going to watch this on YouTube now that we won't be muted. Let's get into some Dornfelder, shall we? All right, so first things first. I knew I was in trouble when I went to Jancis Robinson's The Oxford Companion to Wine. You know, that book is, 5,000 pages long. And there's only two paragraphs on Dornfelder. So I knew it might not be the easiest grape to find information on. So it was a little nerve-wracking trying to find the information. As you know, Debbie, I am a huge tapophile, so I love cemeteries. And very often I find cemeteries or, memorials to the person who died versus an actual picture of the person who died. So this is actually August Herald, and Dornfelder was created by him. So it is a purposed pollination, cross-pollination. And what he did was he crossed Helfenstener with Harold Reeb. And yes, he had already named another grape variety after himself. So both of the grape varieties that were crossed were also created by him. And as people that I was reading about him stated, he was a little upset that he had already named this Harold Reeb after himself, because Dornfelder was really the grape, I guess it was his pride and joy baby grape that he created, and he wished that he was able to name it after him. So he was working at the Grape Breeding Institute in Weinsberg in the Württemberg region, and he chose the name Dornfelder after the 19th century founder of the Württemberg Viticultural School. So Dornfelder received varietal protection and was released for cultivation in 1979. So what is meant by varietal protection is that, the government basically came in and declared that this is what Dornfelder is, and it is an actual grape variety that is distinct from other grape varieties, and now it can be labeled as such. Its genealogy incorporates every important red grape variety in Germany. So it really is takes everything. It is the melting pot of German wines. The variety has amazingly carried the best of the traits of its predecessors, as opposed to inheriting the worst, which is really fantastic breeding. It is an easier vine to grow than Spätburgunder, which is Pinot Noir. It is more rot resistant than Portgeiser. Its stalks are stronger than Trollinger, and it has better ripeness levels than both Port Geyser and Trollinger. Additionally, it ripens earlier than Lemberger, which is Blaufränkisch. And the biggest negative of Dornfelder is that if the vineyard manager doesn't really pay attention to it, it can grow and grow and grow. I mean, it gets out of control with yields of over 120 hectoliters per hectare, which is about 6.8 tons per acre. So that is out of control. When you think about the, you know, grape varieties that we drink, you know, the Cabs, the quality Cabs, the Cab Francs, you know, the Zins, we're, you know, you're talking a ton or something, you know, one or 1.5 tons. So 6.8 tons per acre is just massive. It also tends to have a higher alcohol content than the other red grapes of Germany. So although first produced to be a blending grape, Dornfelder is beginning to see a rise in quality and production as a single varietal in the Rheinheisen and the Pfalz. Now, mine is actually from the Rheinheisen. Deb, where do you know where yours is from?
Same.
Okay. So typically, the red wines of Germany are known for their lighter color and body. However, Dornfelder led the way to producing the more internationally accepted style of deep color. And this is definitely much deeper than what we're used to seeing.
Real dark.
When, you know, the Spätburgunders, the Pinot Noirs of Germany. And most Dornfelders actually do benefit from oak aging. And it is the second most grown red wine grape variety in Germany. From Germany, the plantings of Dornfelder actually spread in the late 20th century to Switzerland. And then in the late 1980s, it was introduced to England and is actually used rather frequently as a rosé and in their sparkling wine. Wineries began to produce it as a light-bodied single variety. However, it was not very well received. So you can also find some plantings in the Czech Republic. In the United States, it can be found in Lodi and the Santa Rita Hills AVA of California. And it can be found in the Finger Lakes, as well as being in the BC region on Vancouver Island, Rio Grande do Sul region of Brazil. There are a total of 5 hectares on Japanese island of Hokkaido.
Wow.
I don't know if I said that correctly. That is the history.
I'll go into characteristics.
Yes.
But once again, they really do look like clusters of blueberries.
They do. They're very short bunches. You know, when we were in school and learning, you know, identifying characteristics, you know, you're looking at the leaf lobes, you know, and the petioles and things like that. But the clusters themselves, the berries are either large, small, or medium. And then the clusters are either circular or cylindrical, and then they're either short or long. So this is definitely, you know, short but cylindrical. Like it's
yeah.
You know, it looks like it's a perfect, you know, the people who have the cartoon grapes.
Uh-huh.
That's what it looks like.
Dornfelder is the second most widely planted grape in Germany. Initially bred as a blending grape to improve the color of German pale red red wines. Mostly grown in Pfalz and Rheinhessen region, Pfalz is one of Germany's largest region and leads the red wine production. Vines are protected by cold wines and excessive rain by the Palatinate forest. And this creates a Mediterranean climate. Rheinhessen is the land of 1,000 hills, Germany's largest growing region. The rolling hills reflects the landscape of the areas where the gentle rolling hills are aligned with grapevines. Warm summers and mild winters give 1,700 hours of sun each year, and it makes it Germany's warmest growing region. It's a dark, thick grape. It's resistant to rot, has a heavy yield, full-bodied, complex, and tannic and acidic. And it's dark colored, firm, intense, and spicy. Spicy wine, blackish purple in color. It's known for its oak notes. You'll find rich oak flavor, hints of plum, cherry, blackberry, soft, rich, velvety texture that gives a rich mouthfeel, little floral notes, and a touch of sweetness. They range from dry to medium dry. Well, we definitely got the medium dries.
Yes.
There's two kinds of Dornfelders. There's one to drink now and one to age. The drink now Dornfelders will highlight the fruitiness of the wine with the hints of cherry, elderberry, and boysenberry. Aged in oak, the wine doesn't have much fruitiness, but it enhances the tannin structure of the wine.
Cherry is by far the predominant aroma and on the palate here. And you know what? I wouldn't have said it because it probably wouldn't be the first thing that comes to mind, but I do put boysenberry does make sense.
I do boysenberry too. I just wrote that down.
You know,
it starts out with the cherry pie and it finishes with the boysenberry with a hint of tartness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think we have, even though it's two different wines, I think we're very similar.
Yes.
The finish, if you those who are watching this, I don't think you actually saw it, Debbie. Both times I've taken a sip of this wine, at the very end, I'm like, there is the tartness.
Yes.
Is so strong.
Yes.
On the finish of this that it's like you take a sip and you're like, okay, I can deal with this. And then doing, here comes the tartness. Wow. I'm not going to say it's bad. I'm not, you know, I mean, it's not faulty. It is not faulty at all.
Mm-mm.
It is not faulty at all. But I kind of like my wines to be a bit more evolved than this, as opposed to just having cherry and then tart.
And this drink's more like a tart juice than it does a wine.
It's grape juice.
I wouldn't say grape juice. I think it's cherry for that. But
cherry juice.
Yes, it's like a cherry, almost like a blue, you know, something with a tart finish. Like that's how it drinks. It's smooth. It's definitely, mine is smooth on the palate. There's no, there's nothing wrong with it.
No, there.
I definitely can see, you know, somebody that likes this wine. It's definitely for them, and at $10, hey.
I know. At $10, I think there is a very large market for this. Mine says slightly sweet, and it's not what I thought. When I read that, I was like, oh, you know, I was like, uh-oh, this is going to be bad. It's not really tasting sweet, and it's 9.5% ABV.
Mine's 8.5.
And so I really thought it was going to be sweet. I get the acid level, I guess, is enough to handle that sweetness. I don't think it would be bad, and it probably would be a decent, like, with a chocolate, you know, like some sort of dessert.
Mm-hmm.
Cherry
pie.
That might be true. That might be
cherry. Yeah.
But I'm thinking chocolate. Like a chocolate souffle, like not, you know, not like chocolate gooey, you know, like
not that chocolate sweet chocolate.
Right, like a souffle. Mm-hmm. You know, that's kind of I can see that being going actually very well with this. Just like a little bit of bittersweet chocolate.
Mm-hmm.
You know? I don't know.
I don't know if the bittersweet chocolate might
be too much
with the tartness on the finish.
Well, that's true. Then I'll really get my whole face going after I have it. It's not as bad as I thought it was going to be. I have to be honest.
I'm honest too. It's not as bad as I thought it would be either. Is it something that I would go and purchase again? Probably not.
No.
No. No.
But I think for $9.99, it's not a bad bet for people who like this type of wine. It really does just taste like cherry juice.
Yeah, and I think that the people that like sweet wine, like when I work festivals and stuff, that like it sweet, they would like this wine.
I'm trying to think of that company that makes all of those fruit drinks, because that's what it reminds me of. Yeah, we're switching. Sorry. We're gonna do a first, and I'm gonna rinse this glass with just a little bit, and we are switching to Cap Franc. So I now am going to drink a Derby, lovely, lovely, lovely Derby, Cabernet Franc. So Derby is from Paso Robles, and I adore them.
Was a good Cap Franc. I had it for Cap
It
Franc.
is a very good Cab Franc. This is a 2012, I just love Derby. I drive past them all the time, and my car kind of automatically goes into their driveway. And it's a historic building, so it's really kind of cool.
Do you have any history on your Dornfelder?
Yeah, I know. I can rattle off the history of Derby a lot easier. All right. So Leonard Krush, Sweet Dornfelder. Again, I said it was a 9.99 ABV of 9.5%. And as we talked about when I grabbed it, and yours also, I didn't realize it was a sweet wine. But wine enthusiast likes this wine. It was actually given a Best Buy, and I don't know. All I get is the very end of what he says, or she says. I don't know who rated it. It is pristinely ripe black cherry. I don't get black cherry. And blackberry flavors abound in this sweet, slightly syrupy red wine. And that's what I would say. It is slightly syrupy. That is a perfect description in to me. That's kind of what I was trying to get at with that grape with that cherry juice thing that you buy in the ShopRite or whatever. They also go on to say it's plush and easy on the palate, held upright by sweet tart cranberry acidity and the softness of tannins. It's an approachable, easy wine to enjoy now. So, I agree with that. I get the syrupy red, and definitely that sweet tart on the finish. And as I mentioned, the acidity holds up to that sweetness. At age 27, Leonard Krush founded his family winery and began making wine commercially. Immediately after the United States Prohibition, he jumped on board and he began exporting the wine to the United States. In 1949, Leonard's son purchased the former St. Martiner Sectellerie as the new home for the winery. And this was originally built in 1898 and is located on the left bank of the Moselle River, and it is actually still today the company's headquarters. So that, I mean, it's a black and white and old photo, but I can imagine seeing that in real life. You've got the river down in front of
Oh,
you and
yeah.
beautiful ridge mountains behind you. It must be magnificent there. And a little New Jersey tidbit. In 1950, he actually created a corporation in New Jersey so that he could import and distribute his own wines. So 4 generations and 60 years later, the company is still family owned, and they have now expanded to importing, I'm sorry, exporting to a multitude of European countries. And that is all there was on that. And now, a word from our sponsor. Did you know that Dracena Wines now has a wine club? We named it the Chalk Club. Draco was on our label, but Vegas was getting a little jealous, so we decided he deserved to be our club spokesdog. In Las Vegas, betting chalk means that you are betting on all of the favorites. We are betting that we are one of your favorite wineries, so we thought the name was apropos. The club is simple, yet a bit different than most. When you wager on us, we will ship you 3 bottles of wine twice a year, once in April and once in September. You can choose all red or mix of red and rosé. You immediately receive 15% off of all your wine purchases throughout the year, but what makes our club stand out is the progressive discount. Let your club membership ride into the next year. Your discount increases. Each year you parlay your membership, you receive an additional 5% off up to a planned maximum of 25%. Your club shipments are discounted to a flat $15, plus we'll cover your club shipping cost for your second shipment. That's $15 house money in a sure bet for you. So please head to our website, DracenaWines.com, and find out all of the benefits of joining the Chalk Club and how to sign up. We've stacked the odds so that you can get our award-winning wines without breaking the bank.
Well, you have a lot more than I have. I couldn't find anything on mine. What I pulled off of Regal Wine Imports, I pulled it off of their website because it was the only place I could find something for it. Oh, wine. So anyway, what I got was, so as far back as 1780, The Windisch family has lived in the village of Momenheim near Nierenstein and Mainz. As well as producing wines using the Riesling grape, the Windisch vineyards also produce fine wines using Dornfelder, Scheurebe, Müller, Thurgau, Silvaner, Grau Burgunder, Weiss Burgunder, Chardonnay, Pinot Noir, Portugieser, and Regent. Due to the individual sites, the Windisch vineyards are all different. But the wines produced from grapes, which are fermented in oak casks and in stainless steel pressure tanks, all have something in common. They all have a racy, fruity character and represents the typical character of the wines from this growing region. Average age of the vines they have are 30 years. They have approximately 2 million liters of wine that they produce. Typical vineyard soils in the Rheinheisen is loess, which can be considered the most typical parent rock in this area. Windborne sands are found in the Rhine Valley near Alsheim, Mettenheim, Gimbischheim, Gulsterblum, and on the northern edge of the Rheinhausen Plateau near Mainz and Ingelheim. It's a wine enthusiast's best buy. It's semi-sweet, soft tannins, cherries, red berries, plum, and smooth tannins. So that's...
What vintage was yours?
2017.
Oh, okay. Mine's 17.
But
well, you know, you can't win them all. And like, yeah. I said, you know what? This is a good wine.
Yeah, it's mine's not a bad wine at all.
Right. It's well made. It's very palatable. I think the tartness at the finish is a bit off kilt. But it is a 2018, but it's a good wine. It's just not my palate.
Same here. Mine is a good wine. It's made well. The palate profile is there. I didn't find any faults with it.
Right.
I just am not a semi-sweet wine person.
Right. I just want to share, Michael Kelly is drinking a Pre, and he paid $27 for it. It's 12.7% alcohol, and he paired it with Mahi Mahi on Friday, and today he had it with Tri-Tip. Tonight, having it with tri-tip as fish was not the right choice. So, yeah, none of the stuff that I'm going to get into the food pairing suggestions, and definitely fish was not on that list. And then what else? He's got the Prius, 69 acres planted in Cal. Oh, I guess Dornfelder has 69 acres planted in California, and the San Joaquin has 43 acres, and there are 19 acres in Sacramento. So that's bigger actually than I thought it would be. I am going to move on to food pairings. Every website that I went to had exactly, word for word, exactly the same thing.
Wow.
Like other full-bodied reds, Dornfelder wines, particularly those with some age, are delicious with full-flavored roasts, game, and cheese. Word for word on every single website.
Wow.
So that didn't really give me a lot of information on suggestions to pair with it. And as you know, anybody who listens to me on any regular basis, those are not at all any meals that would ever end up on my plate. So it's always interesting when I have to do the food pairings. Anyway, we started off with red wine pot roast. I figured red wine, it's a roast, it seemed to fit. I thought that would go. I don't know, Deb, I'm gonna rely on you.
It probably would. Yeah, I think so.
All right, because not happening in my on my plate. All right, now roast beef with roasted potatoes. I honestly didn't know if pot roast and roast beef were the same thing. I don't know if they're the same thing.
They're different. It's a different cut of meat.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Coming from a butcher's granddaughter.
I didn't know if it was the same thing. I thought they were different.
They are.
I didn't know. So roast beef, roasted potatoes, it sounded like, you know, double roast. It sounded like that was what they were describing. Venison stew.
Mm-hmm.
Again, I have no clue what that tastes like, so I have no idea. I am literally just going off of that.
It probably wouldn't be bad with venison stew.
It's pretty gamey, right? Venison is.
Yeah. I had venison the other night. Mm-hmm. It was really good.
It's not one of the most gamey game meats, but it's.
Depends on where you get your venison. You know, it can be tough. It can, you know, it's just from neighbors that hunt.
Oh, okay. All right. All right. The next one. Forgive me. Bacon wrapped grilled
elk
backstrap.
Where'd you come up with that one?
Allrecipes.com, courtesy of John 0811. Here's the deal. I don't know who's eating elk. I'm guessing, you know, I don't know, Canadian people, up north people. I don't know. But I figured you add bacon to it and it's got to make it better. I have no idea. I really shouldn't be allowed to do food pairings, Debbie. I really shouldn't. Super
goose. Look at that goose.
I don't even know how that is a goose. What the hell am I looking at?
I don't know either.
I have no idea what I'm looking at. All I could think about was, you know, A Christmas Story when they have the goose on Christmas Eve and then they just chop his head off. I don't know. Okay. Now onto my jams. All right. Cheese. Okay. This is called, this person, courtesy of Squire, again, allrecipes.com, the cheese thing. This dish looks amazing to me. It's like five different cheeses, and then it's the diced tomatoes that you buy, like, for Mexican food.
Mm-hmm.
You have a little can with the chilies in it.
Yeah.
So I was like, all right, I think that could go. A little bit of heat. Those chilies aren't really spicy at all, but you know, I don't know.
You know, this would also taste, because it's sweet with spicy food.
Yeah, well, that's why I did think about that because the little chilies have a little heat. They're not out of control, like at all. You know,
Right.
they're just a little bit. That's why I picked that. And then just simply a nice grilled cheese sandwich, depending on, it's a nice fall or winter meal. And depending on how simple or complex you want to get, you can decide what cheese you're going to put in there. And then, we can never have food pairings without an obligatory cheese board.
Yeah.
So some, nuts and, different types of cheeses
Looks like
and
corn and raisins.
yeah, and those Spanish almonds,
I love those.
those go with anything.
Yes.
And some Gouda. Gouda goes with pretty much any red wine there is.
Brie,
So
goat cheese.
yeah, so that is my food pairings for Dornfelder
Yeah, fact. That's the
Institute.
Institute. That's the Wine Institute. Yeah, Dornfelder was born in 1956 in Germany, grown by August Herold in the Weinberg Research Center in Baden-Württemberg. One of the things to note about August, he was called to war in 1941 to 1948. He was also a prisoner of war during that time. And after the war, he came home and just went right back to what he was doing at the Wine Institute. His main contributions to viticulture was the scientifically based grape breeding programs in Weisberg, which produced several multi-cultivated grape varieties. Among them, obviously, Dornfender, Health, and Dornfender's parents, Health Stenner and Harold. And the research center has a really big, long, long name today in German, but English, it's the State Education and Research Institute for Viticulture and Pomology. And that's the research center. So now at least the
Slides match up.
slides match the verbiage. So Dornfelder is a cross between Helfensteiner and Herold. Helfensteiner is the dark-skinned grape, and it's a cross between, excuse me, Verbrunnegunder, which is a Pinot Prescott Noir and a Trollinger. The grape variety was named after a castle ruin in Helfenstein. Harold, how do you say that? Harold Reeder
Harold.
it's a late ripening grape. Dornfelder received varietal protection in 1979. They have a little sister. I call it the lost sister. It's a great variety called Hegel, which shares the same DNA, same parentage as Dornfelder. The crossing took place in August of 1955 by August Herold and was given variety protection in 1994. It's a medium ripening grape, produces dark red skin with spicy aromas, and it's planted in Germany and a small plot in Belgium. See, that's the our face is cut off, but that's the little sister.
Oh.
See, and I have his picture, Emmanuel's picture. Dornfelder was named after Emmanuel August Ludwig Dornfeld, who was one of the founders of the viticulture at the Weinsberg during the 19th century. He was a wine grower and he was considered the spiritual father and main initiator of the wine school at Weissenberg. Other areas and regions that grow Dornfelder are Switzerland in the cantons of Zurich, Schweiz, England, the Czech Republic, California in the Santa Rita Hills and Lodi, New York Finger Lakes, Virginia, Pennsylvania, Hokkaido, Japan, and Brazil's Rio Grande do Sul. And that's all I got on that.
And that, ladies and gentlemen, is Dornfelder.
Dornfelder. Well, thank you guys.
Yeah.
I
So
mean, this is interesting.
submitted. I don't even know how it actually works, but I was curious as to that Century Club. You know, have you, right? So I downloaded the application and so I was like, "Ooh, Dornfelder, it's on there. I'm gonna check
that
out."
I have one right here, the app. Yeah.
Yeah, so I have 125 grape varieties that I have tasted. So I guess I'm gonna get a certificate. I don't know how that really works, but I sent it in.
I haven't submitted mine. It's sitting here.
I don't know how it works, but I guess I'll get a certificate that says it. I don't know if I have to pay for it or what, but it was kind of interesting. 125 grape varieties
When
that.
I look at it every now and then and check off the ones that I've done, and it's really kind of interesting. And some of them aren't on there that I've done.
Yeah, there's blank lines, so
Yeah.
you can add. Yeah. So I was like, wow, that's, and you know, a lot of that has to do with this show and the groups on Twitter, like Wine Pairing Weekend. There's so many grapes that I've tried for Wine Pairing Weekend, and you know, and gosh, you know, for this episode, we keep trying to find, you know, we keep trying to find grape varieties that aren't the, you know, we don't purposely don't choose Cabernet Sauvignon. We purposely don't choose Merlots, you know.
Right.
Yeah, it was kind of
Okay, next month.
oh yeah.
Next month.
I'm excited.
Yeah, next month it is
Next month I get to go back to Hungary and we are going to taste bull's blood. Egre, yeah.
Monday, February 17th.
Written a blog post about why it's called bull's blood. And it's an amazing history. So I'm very excited. Thank you everybody for
Thank
joining.
you.
We appreciate all of your support for Wine for Bet Street. We love that we can hopefully share some wine education with you. And please, you know, let us know if there is any grape variety that you would like us to delve into. You know, basically, we're willing to do any grape variety. The biggest limiting factor is whether or not Debbie and I can get the bottle, because you know, we always do sample. We always do purchase the bottle ourselves and buy it. So any
Yeah.
wine variety that you're interested in learning about, please give us a shout out on the social medias. I'm everywhere at both Dracaena Wines and Exploring the Wine Glass, except on Twitter because that's too many letters. So I'm just Explore without the E, Wine Glass.
And I'm Hudson Valley Wine Goddess. Pretty much everywhere, Twitter, Instagram, I'm HV Wine Goddess.
And you know, give us a shout out and let us know what you would like us to do.
And wait a second, we are in the need of I, if anyone has a good I, and a K. So that's June and August. So
Right.
we're looking for a grape, preferably a grape variety, or a region I and K.
And again, you know, that we have what we were thinking for those other letters, but if there's something you want, we can always change it. So just let us know.
So,
But
definitely.
thank you, everybody. Have a
Thank
wonderful
you.
month, and hope you have something nice in your glass tonight.
We'll see you next month. Have a great week.
Sláinte. This has been another episode of Exploring the Wine Glass. Thanks for listening. If you have suggestions on what topics you would like me to discuss, please reach out on social media. You can find me on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook as Exploring the Wine Glass. I'm also on LinkedIn as Lori Hoyt Budd. Of course, you can always email me at exploringtheWineGlass@gmail.com. If you enjoyed our podcast, please rate, review, and subscribe on your favorite podcast catcher to help others find me more easily. Until next week, Sláinte.